WWE superstars are trained professionals who have spent years learning to execute these moves safely. So be smart. Be safe. Don't try this. Woo, woo, woo.
From Television City in Hollywood,
this podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Following Rusty Exhibition requires discretionary viewer participation.
Greetings from Allentown is taped in front of a live studio audience.
This time is mine. I'm gonna show you what I'm made of. Show the world all the things you never heard of. I'm ready to go, ready to shine. Taking it to the top and making it all mine. Making it all mine. It's a bumpy ride. It's all about your best. All about your
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 149 of Greetings from Allentown. I am your host, Peter Winston. And I'm sure you're very confused because you heard the voice of Zack Ryder in the cold open of this. You're like, what the hell is going on here? What is this theme song? It sounds like some sort of modern WWE thing. Well, there's an explanation for that. There's definitely a very good explanation for why I'm doing a show called WWE Saturday Morning Slam from September 22nd, 2012, when I wasn't watching, when I didn't care, when probably anybody who was watching and did care has retained virtually nothing about this period of time. Can you tell me the results of the Night of Champions pay-per-view from 2012? Well, yeah, it was in Boston, Massachusetts, but I really don't know, other than maybe the one match I came across in just sort of looking it up. I don't really know. I'll get to my explanation in a little bit. But first, let me get in my plugs. You can email the show, greetingsfromallentown@gmail.com. Facebook.com/greetingsfromallentown. Give me a follow on Twitter at GF Allentown Pod. That is at GF Allentown Pod. And you may be listening to the show on the Pro Wrestling Only feed. And there are a lot of other great shows on Pro Wrestling Only. I urge you to check them out. I'm taping this well ahead of time. So, you know, I don't know what shows there are going to be. Bigfoot Pro Wrestling Podcast probably on Monday. Days of Thunder probably on Thursday. And the list goes on and on. So hit the subscribe button on the feed if you would. So why the hell am I covering this show? This was kind of an emergency contingency thing. This is a half-hour program that aired on the CW back in the 2012-2013, I want to say television season, because it lasted from August to May. So why this one in particular? Well, it's got a William Regal match, which I guess makes it a little bit more tolerable. But let me go in. Let me just hit the rewind button, because I had put my show and I had taped everything and edited it together for the show that came out on the 26th by the 23rd. So 2 days before Christmas, I'm up like 11 o'clock at night. I gotten home from the Boston Bruins Washington Capitals game, which completely different thing that I could do a completely separate podcast just on that game and how pissed off I was coming out of that. But I get home, I'm doing like the final edits, running through the compressor, yada yada. I got my foot up on the ottoman and I think to myself, I kind of feels funny, because the previous Thursday I had twisted my knee at a Bruins game. I was up standing in my seat, because I sit in the last row, so I stand for much of the game. And in my row, the floor was extremely sticky from spilled soda, spilled beer, not just from Bruins games, but probably from Celtics games or what have you, concerts that might have been there in the previous weeks. And it hadn't been cleaned. And at one point, my right leg slipped on a particularly slippery spot and then stuck on one of the sticky spots. And I felt a pop in my knee. And it kind of hurt for a little bit. But I just wrote it off as, ah, no big deal. I mean, it's going to heal itself. And for the next couple of days, I was fine. I went to see Star Wars on the Friday night in which it came out. I'm not going to, certainly not going to comment on any of that. No spoilers or anything. But have you ever really noticed that Kylo Ren looks a little too much like Rudy Tomjanovich, the former NBA coach? And I'm not talking like later Rudy T. I'm talking about like Rudy T when he got punched by Kermit Washington back in 77. I urge you to check out the pictures of that, because if you know what Rudy T looked like, you would find that very, very funny. So anyway, I digress from that, but I edit the show together on the 23rd, and I wake up at 3 a.m. on the 24th, and my leg is absolutely throbbing, and I try to get out of bed to go to the bathroom, and I cannot put any weight on my leg. And I'm like, oh shit, what the hell happened? Like, did I actually, like, bust up my knee? Did I, like, twist knee ligaments? First of all, at a hockey game, and not as a player, but as a spectator, and also as a non-contact injury. So, okay, yeah, that's pretty embarrassing. Meanwhile, on the 24th, I was fortunate enough to have a doctor's appointment for my gallbladder issue to meet with the head of surgery for the whatever the hell the organization is. So I meet with him at 8 a.m. and he's a pretty quick guy, kind of doing like a rapid fire comedy routine, not unlike Santino Marella, although I could understand him a little bit. Santino, we're going to hear him on commentary on this show. So he kind of feels my right side of my stomach and he says, how does that feel? I'm like, ow! And like, oh yeah, your gallbladder is inflamed and it's going to need to come out. And we're going to schedule it for Monday, December 30th, which, as I'm taping this, is the day after, that's tomorrow. So less than 24 hours, I'm not going under the knife. I don't know exactly, they make a little hole and then they pull it out of you and they liquefy it, apparently. It's extremely disgusting. So what a scene it was on the morning of the 24th in the surgery unit of the Chelmsford Harvard Vanguard, where I'm hobbling out of the surgery area, and there's a bunch of people like waiting there, and I wanted to look around and say, oh yeah, by the way, I'm not getting surgery for that leg that I'm hopping on. I'm actually getting surgery for something else. And I'm just hobbling around because I don't have a cane or anything, and I don't have a brace. So I make my way out to my wife's car. We drive down to Long Island for Christmas. We make it down there like 1 or 2 in the afternoon. And I eventually play that game of Madden against my nephew. And in basically indicative of what my entire week was like. By the way, I spilled pineapple juice all over the cover of the notebook that I've been using for the show. I thought that was going to be the worst thing that would happen to me this week, but apparently not. So the Madden game that I played against my nephew glitched out in the third quarter with me trailing 20-7 because he did a kickoff out of bounds, and then all of a sudden the camera just panned to the crowd and would not come back, so we could not continue playing. So that was that, and I guess technically I lose. I mean, the game went more than five innings in the baseball parlance. You get to Christmas Eve with the family, you get the kids there, everybody's having a good time, my leg is completely throbbing, and I'm just looking to, like, keep it elevated and get some ice on it or something. So I'm basically watching the two nine-year-olds playing NASCAR racing on the TV, and I got an ice pack on my leg. But it's not doing any good because I can't walk from place to place. I'm struggling badly. So the next morning, I decide I have to go to an urgent care because the ER is too friggin' expensive, and it's not like they could operate it on it anyway because it was so swollen. Maybe I can get crutches or a proper cane, because when I drove over there in my wife's car, my wife had actually gone to her nephew's first Christmas up in Locust Valley, so I was there to fend for myself. So looking for something I could use as a cane, I took a street hockey stick from the garage, turned it upside down, and that was my cane to get from the car to the car, and then from the car into the urgent care, which opened at 9 a.m. And what they did is they looked at my leg. They can't do an MRI. It's 2.5 times swollen to 2.5 times the size of my other knee. So clearly something's wrong. They take an x-ray. The x-ray has actually come back fine, so nothing is broken, because that would have made things infinitely worse. Long story short, just from my analysis, knowledge of knees from, you know, years of guys hurting their knees in various sports, hockey, football, what have you, I do not believe I tore my ACL. I do believe that I did something to my MCL and possibly tore it because it's the inside part of my right knee that's really hurting and really swollen. So they outfitted me with a brace and an ACE bandage for sleeping, and I've been wearing that since the 25th. So now I am in day 5 of that, and then tomorrow I'm going to be hobbling in to surgery in the morning, and I'm sure it's going to go fine because it's a relatively routine procedure with the way they do things now, but I'm still a little nervous because I've never actually gone through such a thing before. And when I come out of it, I'm still going to have trouble walking. But on the bright side, as I tape this, my snowblower is supposed to come back within 24 to 48 hours, for which I say, hooray, except with a busted knee, I don't know how well I can use it on the hill part of my driveway, but at the very least, I can clear the flat parts. I mean, I don't want to cry, you know, woe is me. All I'm saying is, the reason why I'd be doing a half-hour show from 2012 is, well, I found it mildly interesting, but also, I'm not going to have the time to get it a full show because I'm going to be absolutely out of my mind tomorrow. Although, now that I think about it, I am scheduled to be recording a podcast with the Place to Be podcast guys looking at the road to WrestleMania 6, that Ultimate Challenge card that aired on USA about a week before the pay-per-view. Now, if I'm on that, if I feel up to it, it's going to be very interesting because I'm not sure anybody has ever had gallbladder surgery and appeared on a podcast in the same day, like as a guest. I mean, I feel like that's a bit, it's kind of like that Billy Graham thing where they showed his hip surgery, except you don't have to watch the surgery. But here's hoping I could cut as good of a promo from an operating table as Billy Graham. Thankfully, I'll be home. They say that the procedure takes 20 minutes. I'm going to be very interested to see how that goes. As a matter of fact, and I was thinking about doing this, and I probably should, why don't I throw it to future me reporting from a couple of days when I'm taping this and see how I'm feeling?
Thank you very much, past me. This is post-operation me reporting from the couch, where for some reason I'm watching the friggin' Redbox Bowl, because that's a thing that exists apparently. I don't know why they're playing it, but it's Illinois versus Cal, so I guess it's somewhat important. So I had my operation this morning, and I can certainly feel the incisions on my stomach, and for a while I was a little panicked. Please pardon my voice, by the way. That the anesthetic was not kicking in. They put like the oxygen or whatever over my mouth, and I'm like, when is this gonna kick in? When is this gonna kick in? Smash cut. I end up waking up in another room 2 hours or so later in the recovery room, where eventually I get fed saltines. Not my preferred brand, but I'm not exactly in a position to complain about. It was that Keebler one, like Zesta. I mean, they're all friggin' broken. Like, I was like challenging myself to try and open the damn saltine pack, like the little 2 saltine pack, without having it break apart on me. Eventually, I succeeded in that. And they let me out of there shortly thereafter. And I'm just glad that I was able to finish the podcast. Oh, laughing hurts. Oh, my goodness gracious. But I was glad I was able to finish the podcast in time. Even if it is 2012 stuff that the audience might not appreciate. But again, it's got Regal in it. So how bad can it possibly be? So my voice is pretty much giving out right now. So I'm going to throw it back to, what was the thing? Past, future, present me? Yeah, why don't I call it that? Thank you.
Thank you very much, future past me. I say that because it is in the future from when I'm taping this, but it's in the past from when you're listening to it. So I'm glad you're doing well, or I'm sorry that you're not doing well. Maybe I could edit that together based on my response, although I probably won't remember because I'm not sure how much of it I'm going to remember in the first place. So anyway, Saturday Morning Slam, a product of the CW Network. As I mentioned earlier, from August 2012 to May of 2013. Not to be confused with Main Event, which you still see on the WWE Network and apparently on Hulu. I was unaware that that was actually televised there. That show started in October of this year. Now, Saturday Morning Slam was part of this programming block called Vortex, and it has two X's at the end. Not to be confused with Vortex with three X's at the end, which I believe Lars Sullivan may have been involved in under the name Mitch Bennett, but that's for another time. So you can tell that it's pre-surgery me, because I can make jokes like that, because I can actually remember what's going on. I was trying to figure out what the hell this Vortex block was, and it was basically just anime shows and WWE. So I was very confused. I mean, yeah, there's definite crossover between that. A lot of anime fans are wrestling fans and vice versa, but, you know, I'm not really an anime guy other than kind of seeing the books when I worked at Barnes & Noble and going, huh, I guess these kind of sell, don't they? And that was pretty much it. Now, we get the debate, you know, between, oh, TV 14 as it was in the Attitude Era, and TV PG, which is what it's been since 2008, which they did mainly for advertiser reasons. This was rated TVG. And now, that's not to be confused with the cable television channel TVG, where you could watch horse racing and perhaps bet on it as well. I know my friend down in Florida was talking about this bar that he goes to where they will actually put TVG on one of the TVs for him if he specifically requests it, because he's enough of a regular. But TVG, what does that mean from a wrestling in the wrestling context? Now, if you had a problem with TVPG, you're not going to like this, because the restriction is no moves or holds can be shown aimed at the head or neck, which pretty much means no clotheslines, no super kicks. I mean, really a lot of moves kind of go out the window. So how exactly do you work around that? Well, it helps to have somebody like William Regal in the only match on this show who knows how to do a lot of different stuff and actually make it entertaining. But the show, it only lasted for as long as it did because the CW wanted to kind of move it into a news magazine sort of show. And the WWE was like, nah, we are not interested in that concept. Which is funny because now that exists in multiple forms with that backstage show. I don't know what WWE The Bump is all about. Kind of strikes me a little bit like that. And not to mention all the documentaries that they throw on the network with the various 365s. Even though every 365 that comes out seems to be about Seth Rollins, guess what? And by the way, earmuffs, children, I don't fucking care about Seth Rollins. Stop fucking putting Seth Rollins on the fucking 365s. I'll fucking watch a Dolph Ziggler one over that, okay? I'll even fucking watch Dolph Ziggler having his fucking gallbladder taken out. Stop putting Seth Rollins 365 on there. Thank you very much. So, anyway, I'm not totally sure what to expect with this show, or I wasn't, at least, going in. This was either when this was taped is a matter of some conjecture. It was either taped in Moline, Illinois, or in Ottawa, Ontario. And it's such a sad state with the way arenas are now that I can't really tell the difference between one or the other. I'm assuming that it's Moline, Illinois, but it said Ottawa on Cage Match. I mean, maybe I should just pretend that it's Ottawa because I could actually say stuff about that arena, which is built in nearby Kanata, Ontario, which was later annexed by the city of Ottawa, but maybe I've already done that stuff. The interesting thing going on in WWE in the month of September 2012 was the Raw in Montreal and Jerry the King Lawler having a heart attack at the announce table and being basically wheeled out of there. And I guess maybe saved by socialized medicine. I don't know the exact details of it, but luckily, the King is still with us to this day. But our one match is Zack Ryder versus William Regal, and I figured, well, if Regal's in it, it's got to be good. However, I did not know about the restrictions of TVG wrestling, so it should be interesting. And like I said, how exactly do you work around that? So with all that in mind, why don't we just get right into the show?
Tommy drives it to right field. It is way back, and a double and an RBI. Jim Tomey with an RBI double. Jones will score, and the Orioles have a 7-6 lead.
Orioles tack on two more in the frame as they win their 16th consecutive extra inning contest courtesy of a 9-6 win over the Red Sox in 12 innings Saturday.
Oh, for the days when the Orioles would be my sports salvation, because at this time in September of 2012, the NFL was using scab officials who were an absolute embarrassment to the product, even beyond what it usually is with the regular officials. The NHL had one of their patented lockouts going on. The NBA wasn't going at that point, and I really wasn't paying too much attention to college football. But yeah, number of things to remember. Remember the 2012 Orioles? Jim Tomey played for the Orioles. I just want to, you know, remember that, and how the Orioles went 29-9 in one-run games, and won, I don't know how many more after 16 straight extra inning games, but that's a hell of a lot. I was not at that game at Fenway Park on that particular Saturday afternoon. I went the next day, which turned out to be Dylan Bundy's major league debut, which they lost 2-1 to the Red Sox. But they would win the wild card game, and then would get screwed against the Yankees in Game 5 of the ALDS when Nate McLouth hit the foul pole. But, of course, the umpires call it foul, because God forbid they get a call at Yankee Stadium between the Orioles and the Yankees in a playoff game correct. Am I right? All right, so I should just move on from that. So the show starts with the then, now, forever tag, with the, you know, the exploding fireworks off the top of the stadium. I don't know which one it is. I always thought it was MetLife, but considering that this is before that WrestleMania, it's definitely not that. It's a good tagline, although it's also one that you can very easily make fun of, which I think is what part of what makes it such a good tagline. Kind of reminds me, back in the day, in 2005, when they had that other hockey lockout and they missed an entire season, and when they came back to promote the Boston Bruins coming back on Nesson in the Boston area, they had this campaign called "It's Called Bruins." And when they basically screwed up everything for that entire season, "It's Called Bruins" became something of a catchphrase between not only my friends, but probably many people in the region. So today, we focus on the Intercontinental title, and I am delighted by that, because they're not talking about dudes who held the Intercontinental title in 2005. Oh no, they're showing us footage of freaking like Pat Patterson here. I mean, wow. I mean, familiar faces. Savage, Brett. These are not the faces I was expecting on my WWF programming in 2012. Although Brett was clearly on friendly terms. He had that 2010 run. And he also showed up for the Raw in Montreal and kind of gave a speech at the opening of the show and had a little confrontation, I guess, with then WWE champion CM Punk. Which reminds me, who are the title holders in WWE at September 22nd, 2012? I actually took the liberty of looking this up because I do not know. And what's amazing to me is how many of these dudes are still there. I mean, you think about it, this is over 7 years ago, and you think about WWE, let's say, at the time of WrestleMania 8, how many guys at WrestleMania 8 were still there from the first WrestleMania? It's pretty much just Piper and Hogan, and Piper went away for a while, and a lot of these guys, it's not like they went somewhere else. CM Punk is your WWE champion, as I said. He had been the champion since the previous year's Survivor Series. This is the 434-day reign. He had turned heel on the Raw 1000 in September, which you could argue either way, but I guess they wanted to make an impact with that Raw 1000, but there were any number of things they could do. I mean, Punk was pretty popular, and they clearly dropped the ball with the 2011 thing, but I'm not going to relitigate that, because when he went away and then they just brought him back like a week later, it was basically an admission of they just don't have the patience to do long-term storytelling like, I don't know, maybe they once did, or other promotions are able to do. The World Heavyweight Champion, the owner of the big gold belt, was Sheamus. Now, earlier that year, Sheamus had the match where he beat Daniel Bryan in 18 seconds or whatever the hell it was at WrestleMania 28. It's also my least favorite version of Sheamus because he's basically like this Cena clone with red hair, and it was just really bothersome. And it's not like, you know, it's not like he has the same message going on that John Cena would. I found them too similar. The IC champion is The Miz. Now, we're going to hear from him a little bit later, but doesn't it feel like The Miz is the IC champion like much of the last 7 or 8 years? That's another guy who's been there the entire time. The Divas title, as it was then known, is owned by Eve. I have absolutely no idea who Eve is. Is this the person who did that song with Gwen Stefani? The one that was the cover of the Hall & Oates song from the late 70s? Probably not, but that would be funny if it was. The United States champion was Cesaro, which I wrote down with an exclamation point because that must have been friggin' awesome. But oh yeah, we can't have that. I mean, we can't have Cesaro holding singles title. He can't talk, and we're not allowed to have managers, unless, of course, it's Brock Lesnar, in which case he's allowed a manager for some mysterious reason, even though a lot of his matches have been the same over time. Tag team champions are Team Hell No, that'd be Kane and Daniel Bryan. They beat Kofi Kingston and R-Truth at the Night of Champions pay-per-view in Boston, which was the Sunday immediately preceding this, on the 16th. So yeah, that was the one match that I looked up for Night of Champions, but you probably have forgotten about because so much of it is utterly forgettable. Was the internet champion Zack Ryder? I don't know. Apparently that was a 2011 thing. I mean, you know, it is what it is. All I got to say about Zack Ryder, maybe I should save my thoughts for the actual match, but this is going to be a very free-flowing show. Being an annoying dude from Long Island is not a gimmick. It's just kind of a thing that is, all right? Where you say, oh, I'm from Merrick, New York. Like, oh, well, clearly you must be annoying, right? I mean, oh, tell me more about the Meadowbrook Parkway. Let's pretend that I actually do give a shit. But anyway, I really don't hate Zack Ryder all that much. It's just that The match is a little strange when we get to it, but let's go to The Miz, who's a very talented guy and all, who does all the things that WWE needs him to do. If you need somebody to say, he once drank a duck fart on a plane while upside down in the lavatory, like, Miz will say that for you on the documentary. He will do anything you need. He is the consummate company guy. I'm pretty sure that if Shane Douglas was around now, he would really hate The Miz. Who knows? Watch, he probably actually does, and I just don't know about it. But yeah, they're going to do a quick profile here on The Miz and tell us how awesome he is, I guess.
Awesome! I came to play! Welcome to The Miz Show!
The Miz showing the world why he is indeed awesome.
I'm awesome.
He's won the WWE title, the United States Championship, and the Intercontinental title.
I'm the most must-see WWE superstar of all time.
I know he's must-see, but must we see him now?
Really?
The Miz is nothing more than a megalomaniac.
Really, really?
I actually like Miz in that I think he's perfect for the era in which he performs. I mean, I was thinking about it. I'm like, can you really imagine Mike Mizanin, The Miz, working Continental in like 1986? For some reason, it just seems incredibly far-fetched to me. I'm not saying it's a litmus test or anything. He exists right now, so he should be good in the era in which he exists, but he runs so hot and cold where, like, he has these good years and then he has these bad years, and then some of them are just, like, back-to-back. Like, he main events WrestleMania in 2011, so I'd consider that a good year, even if things start to slide the end of the year. He's just kind of, him and R-Truth are fodder for Rock and Cena at Survivor Series. I mean, that's fine. I mean, somebody's going to, you know, put that over. 2014, I thought, was good. Him and Miz Dow in the second half of the year when he returned. Miz was a babyface and he returned in a late June Raw that year. In 2016, probably the best Miz year of all, that was the one where he gave that speech on Talking Smack that was, I mean, I really don't praise modern stuff to high heavens now, but Daniel Bryan was the GM of SmackDown, because we have to have an authority figure everywhere, and Miz just let loose on him in one of the all-time great promos of this decade. Well, I guess it's not this decade anymore, because the show's coming out January 2nd, but you know what I mean.
You had your chance to talk. You're the one that called me a coward in the wrestling ring. I'm the coward in the wrestling ring.
Yeah.
But let's talk about cowards for 1 second. Okay. The reason I wrestle the way I wrestle is because I can do it day in and day out all the time for 10-plus years. I have never in my career ever have been injured. I don't get injured for 6 months to a year. I am here each and every week. But you sit there and call me a coward?
Yeah.
I'm the coward. Wait, let me tell you about a coward. Let me tell you about a guy who tells his WWE fans, the people that he loves, that he will be back. He promises them. I promise you, I will be back in 1 year's time to claim this title. But you didn't, Daniel, did you? But I'm the coward.
Okay,
I'm the one that doesn't love the fans.
If they would let me come back, I would come back.
Oh, if you would?
Yeah.
You would. You love that WWE ring. You love being wrestling. You love being right in that wrestling ring. And you love wrestling, right? Well,
yeah.
Why don't you quit? Why don't you quit and go to the bingo halls with your indie friends?
Okay, I think
you
need to calm.
No,
that's not what this show's about.
And the GM have this. Thank you very much, Renee. This is a great show, but we're talking here. I need to talk to you real quick, because the fact is, you're the one that calls me the coward, but you're the one that doesn't get in the WWE ring again. No, don't you walk away from me, Daniel. Don't you walk away. I'm the one that loves the fans. I'm the one that loves everyone and everything. You're the one that gets up and walks away every single time. You're the coward. I am not a coward. I am your Intercontinental Champion, and there's a reason I am the title. Reason making this the most relevant, prestigious title that WWE has, and I deserve the respect on SmackDown Live. Get that camera right here. Understand that this is day 141 of the never-ending Intercontinental Championship World Tour, and I swear to you, I promise you, it will be the most relevant title on SmackDown Live. I could care less about those little kids on for the tag team titles and the Women's Championship and the WWE Championship. This is my show. My show. And I'm sick of all of you, my GM, sitting there criticizing me, calling me the coward. You're the cowards. I'm the one here, day in and day out, in that wrestling ring, beating people up. Thank you very much.
Gets me aroused.
No.
Sorry, I meant roused. No, did I mean? I meant aroused. Aroused.
Yeah, that promo was amazing. Completely unscripted. Everybody is just trying to stop him, and he just steamrolls through. It just seems everything that The Miz isn't, he was in that promo. But like I said, yeah, he has his good years, but then he also has these bad years too. Like 2013, I think it was, where like, oh, Ric Flair is teaching him the figure four leg lock, and it just seems so tacked on. And even this year, I mean, it just seems like The Miz is losing on a regular basis. He runs so hot and cold. You know what The Miz is like? He's like one of those faucets that you used to see in your elementary school, where there was a separate faucet for hot and cold. And you couldn't operate them at once. It was either going to be hot or cold. And you'd turn it, but then it would spring right back. So the hot water would come out, but it would only be a little bit of a time unless you held it. So you could never get both hands under there. That's what The Miz is like. He's like a hot-cold faucet with, you know, separate spouts.
In the WWE, awesomeness equals championships. The Intercontinental Championship has been a coveted title in the WWE for more than 30 years. Virtually every legendary WWE champion has held this prestigious prize at one time in their illustrious careers.
Yeah, the list of champions is probably a bit too long, and it's kind of surprising that when Hogan came back in that 2002, although more 2003 time period, because he did win the Undisputed title in 2002, shortly after WrestleMania 18, that he didn't say, brother, you got to put the belt on me, because he hadn't won that title in his career, although he probably considered it beneath him. I don't know. I have no direct path to Hulk Hogan's brain, and for that, I thank God. So this is the Fave Five that apparently airs on Saturday Morning Slam on a regular basis. Not to be confused with the Funny Five with Dr. Demento, who is no relation to Damian Demento. So we start out with they're just going to go through five Intercontinental Champions. I don't think they're ranking them. I think they just want to talk about them, which is good for this show, because when they talk about them, that means I can talk about them.
September 1979, Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. Pat Patterson made WWE history by winning a grueling tournament to become the first ever Intercontinental Champion. Patterson held the title well into the next decade and went on to be one of the first superstars inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame.
The one, the only Pat Patterson.
When I was younger, I would look at Pat Patterson. I'd be like, this guy is an all-time great. He absolutely just looks like shit. He looks like an old guy, even when he was wrestling. Of course, he was old when I would actually see him wrestling. By the time he gets to WWF, he's around 40 years old at that point. And he's one of those guys. I talk about the different incarnations of me watching wrestling and how now you can actually see this sort of stuff. So when you watch Pat Patterson matches, you understand why he was so good at those behind-the-scenes things, because he knew all the little things that went into having a successful pro wrestling match. Like, he knew how to play to the last person in the audience. He could brawl, he could do scientific wrestling, he could do all manner of different things. Although they do say on here that he held the title well into the next decade, which, yeah, April 1980. I'm not sure that's well into the next decade. I'm sure, you know, some dick out there is probably like, the decade doesn't start until 1981 because there was no year zero. To which I say, oh, shut the hell up. We're talking about the term decade as an abstract for a period of time. We're not talking about, oh, we have to start from the year zero. We're talking about ones that start have an eight with the third digit in it. We're talking about 10 years of time. We're not talking about, oh, it has to be exact, 71 to 80. Ugh. Anyway, that kind of shit really bothers me. So let's just go to number two.
Chris Jericho, the self-proclaimed best in the world at what he does, is the most prolific Intercontinental Champion, having won in a record-setting 9 times. That's a record that most likely will never be broken again.
Well, are you sure about that? Because Jericho held the title 9 times and is now in a competing company, and they do tend to like to bury guys who are on the other side, but he actually still has the record to this date. Miz has held the title 8 times, at least according to what I looked up. I didn't feel like going through and checking to see when he won the title each time, but let's say Miz is at 8. He's going to win that title a couple of more times, and they'll erase Jericho from the record books in time. Not to mention the fact that Dolph Ziggler has won this title a lot of times, which tells me that anybody can really come along and win that title 10 times. I mean, it's going to happen. I don't understand why they're treating it like it's, you know, old Hoss Radbourne winning 59 or 60 games, whatever it was, back in 1884. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And I want to bring up a point that I touched on last week, talking about Jack Briscoe and the number of days he held titles, and Valentine with the U.S. title as well. Jericho only held the title for a total of 319 days amongst all those title reigns. So when you think about it, despite winning it 9 times, he held it for less time than the Honky Tonk Man or Randy Savage. Granted, I know it's a completely different era, but you can still have long title reigns if, you know, if it's set up properly, which they probably wouldn't. They probably would. But he's not even in the top 10. He ranks 16th among cumulative Intercontinental Champions.
The force of nature, known as the Ultimate Warrior, was intensity personified.
You can feel it, dude!
Hailing from parts unknown, the Ultimate Warrior is the first and only superstar to win the WWE Championship while still holding the Intercontinental title.
History has been made!
It's really kind of interesting to hear Ultimate Warrior talk on WWE programming in 2012, because this is before the Hall of Fame, and you got the self-destruction of the Ultimate Warrior DVD in the rearview mirror, but that is, the Hall of Fame's closer than when that DVD came out. That's about 7 years in the rearview, and they're clearly, I think, showing a little bit of regret about that when you get to this point. So within 18 months or so, it's announced he's going to be going in the Hall of Fame. So clearly, some groundwork is being laid at this point. So they've definitely softened on it. And when it comes to IC champions, while he's not exactly my cup of tea, he does not fit the what I think the WWE or WWF was going for with the IC champion as the quote-unquote workers' belt that you would see for most of the 1980s. It did serve the purpose that it didn't necessarily do with the other guys of elevating him to that top level. Now, it didn't work, which is probably why a lot of these IC champions kind of end up staying at that level. It is, after all, the mid-card belt.
He called himself the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time. The Honky Tonk Man retained the Intercontinental title for a remarkable 1 year, 2 months, and 27 days, a record that still stands today.
You're a beautiful audience. Thank you.
Now, while the Honky Tonk Man was never the same after he lost the Intercontinental title, for the period in which he held it, but let's say the first year that he had it, in fact, when you get to the very end, it is definitely time for him to lose it. In fact, if he did lose it at WrestleMania 4, I don't think any tears would have been shed over that. But he was a different kind of champion from Warrior in that they're not trying to elevate him, but the heat on him in 87 was such that you could throw him out there and he could main event B shows comfortably around the country, and you have Hogan on the other show. And, you know, he has a case to be the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time. I don't see that to be just because he had the longest title reign. That was more a function of, well, when did the pay-per-views end up happening? You know, what was going on at the time that he had it? Were they going to change titles in the summer of 1988 until you got to the pay-per-view? No, they weren't. He barely beat the longest title reign record of the next guy, who I was also surprised to hear on WWF television or WWE television mentioned in the year 2012.
The irrepressible and unforgettable Macho Man Randy Savage won the Intercontinental title shortly after breaking into the WWE.
When you're the Intercontinental Heavyweight Champion, you can do a lot of things.
Macho Madness swept across the globe, and at WrestleMania 3, in front of a record-setting crowd of 93,000-plus, the Macho Man and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat competed in what is still considered one of the greatest matches in WWE history.
Savage definitely does have the strongest case, which is why he got so pissed off in kayfabe at the Honky Tonk Man in the middle of 1987 when he had started proclaiming himself the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time, and then it leads to his face turn. Because he had a long title reign, yes, and he faced a wide variety of opponents. Tito Santana, the George Steele match is watchable. The feud with Steamboat, which they alluded to, WrestleMania 3, a top 10 match in WWE history by any standard, I think. And it also served to elevate him to that main event level, where he would win the world title a year after losing the Intercontinental title. Although in between, he was doing a lot of interesting stuff in 87, which I've talked about numerous times. I also talked about how in November of 1986, he faced so many different dudes on television between the famous Steamboat match with the throat on the guardrail, Jake on Saturday Night's Main Event, Coco Ware on Wrestling Challenge. I think there's a Billy Jack Haynes match on Superstars or one of the shows at some point. So the belt certainly had meaning, and especially in the 80s, you get to a certain point where, well, when does the IC title not really mean anything anymore? And the correct answer is pretty much 1999, because that's just a wallowing pit of despair for professional wrestling in general. Because if you say earlier, well, you got to think about the SummerSlam 98 ladder match with Triple H and Rock that pretty much cemented both guys, you know, as basically elevating them to that next level. So yeah. Four out of the five guys come from the era in which I am far more comfortable talking, and the other one is Chris Jericho, and he's Canadian, and I'm okay with that as well.
Hey kids, this is WWE superstar CM Punk, and I got today's pop quiz for you. Randy Savage wasn't only an exemplary Intercontinental Champion, he was also a fantastic WWE Champion. My question to you is, who did Randy Savage beat at WrestleMania 4 to win his first WWE title? Your choices are A, Hulk Hogan, B, Andre the Giant, or C, the Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase. Choose wisely.
I'm not saying you have to know the answer to that question to listen to my show. All I'm saying is just go back and listen to episode 8 in the archives, WWF Superstars of Wrestling, April 2nd, 1988. I will give you the answer in that episode. Of course, the show's very different. I sound a little bit more monotone because I hadn't yet found my voice. So anyway, up next, we got Zack Ryder taking on William Regal. a match that caught my attention because of it almost seems like, you know, past and present, like eras colliding, except it feels a little weird to be thinking of Zack Ryder as representative of an era. But let me talk about Regal. Let me gush about him. Let me juggle his balls for a little bit. He is just an all-timer at the little things. And I talked about Pat Patterson, but this is why Steven Regal, I mean, William Regal, I'm sorry, I always call him Steven Regal because I always think of the WCW guy first. And I don't mean to refer to the AWA guy, Mr. Electricity, an ironic name if there ever was one. He did all the things, Regal, that made pro wrestling fun, with the facial expressions, the comedy. Like, he knew how to do everything to do that wasn't wrestling. But also, he was a hell of a wrestler as well, with the way he was brought up, Hardscrabble, Blackpool, England. I know Hardscrabble sounds like a Joe Biden-ism, but it does actually describe where Stephen or he started as Stephen Regal and became William Regal. I'm going to just trip over that the entire time. Now, Zack Ryder from Merrick, New York, asked him about the Meadowbrook Parkway, which goes right by the Nassau Coliseum. He's engaged to Chelsea Green, apparently, which I found out this week, when he replied to one of her tweets where she complained about him talking or looking at his cell phone, you know, just like and ignoring her. Which I don't think you were going to win that one, Zach, or Matt Cardona, as he's now one of the guys who puts his real name on his Twitter. Not for his handle, but for, like, you know, for purposes of, I understand why people do that. It's because if WWE gets rid of him, you know, you want to have a marketable thing going forward. I don't really care about Zack Ryder being very much into action figures. I mean, I have my share. I'm kind of done. I don't really feel the need to go out and get any of them. The only thing I could ever think of is, like, I never got the Hogan and Andre LJN figures, and I probably should, but it's just not a priority at this point because, for God's sakes, how many freaking surgeries am I going to have? I mean, but by the way, in my medical update, I forgot to talk about how much it sucks that you have one surgery on December 30th and you might be having the other in January, and how because it's in two different years, you don't max out your out-of-pocket on both of them, so you basically end up paying double. So, great timing by me on that. If I had just done it last June, it would have been fine because I wasn't working and I was at home all the time. But anyway, back to Zack Ryder, who had a bit of a rise in 2011, where he kind of marketed himself as the internet champion. He had this, you know, Long Island IZ show, which he did on his own YouTube channel, and then regrettably put it on the WWE YouTube channel, where it probably got more views, but also more scrutiny, and they took out things that he might have. He lost editorial control, and you never want to give that up. 2012 rolls around and he's dropping down the card until in September at Night of Champions he wins a pre-show battle royal, a 16 man, to get a US title shot against Cesaro, or Antonio Cesaro as he was known at that time, where he lost, and thank God for that. As you know, 2011-2012 really was not watching at this point. So the rise of Zack Ryder, the fall of Zack Ryder, I don't know any of it. I check in 2014, where apparently there was an interview at some point that year, and I probably read this when it came out, because that year I was eating up content like nobody's business. And Kurt Hawkins gave an interview, and he was a former tag team partner of Zack Ryder and now a current tag team partner of him, where he talked honestly about, well, Ryder had said that his 2012, quote, sucked, and what Hawkins had to say was a little bit more blunt, and there's this theory that if you stand up to Vince McMahon, he will respect you for it, and then you will get a push out of it. It's kind of the, for a modern guy, the Alberto Del Rio theory, but here's what Hawkins had to say. It's kind of very pointed. It really kind of broke the spirit of the locker room. For years, we were told that there's a brass ring. There's that word. Or that phrase, I guess. And it's there for the taking if you work hard enough and get yourself over. And Ryder, he defied the odds, actually does it, and all the boys are rooting for him. He got over without the office, without TV time, and then they just crush it and take it all away from him. It's like, you're not going to get pushed unless they pick you to get pushed, and that's kind of it. Well, yeah, that's pretty much how wrestling has always worked. You get picked to get pushed. And yeah, you do this stuff to get attention for yourself And he was absolutely right to do that. But it's not a guarantee that it's going to work in the long run. And it did give him notoriety for a while, and he's still there. I mean, think of how long he has been with the company. It goes back to my thing, like, people who were at WrestleMania 8 had been, how many of them were there at WrestleMania 1? Not many. It's a 7-year period. Zack Ryder has been with WWE for way longer than 7 years. And he's been, you know, injured during that time and, you know, been in various different things. Like the Hype Bros with him and Mojo Rawley, a team that I kind of liked, but it didn't really go anywhere. And that might have had something to do with injuries, whether it be Ryder or Mojo Rawley. But then you fast forward 2016, he ends up in the IC title ladder match at WrestleMania 32, in part because Kevin Owens wanted, quote unquote, easy challengers. So he gets into the match and he ends up winning it. And, you know, here's this great moment. Here's Zack Ryder holding up the Intercontinental title in Cowboys Stadium or AT&T Stadium or whatever the hell it's called. I'm like, isn't this great? But it also cemented how pointless the storytelling is in modern WWE because he loses the title the next night to The Miz and almost nothing comes of it. It's all for friggin' moments. It's never for anything long term. It's like, yeah, I remember it because I'm referencing it now. But I don't go back and watch WrestleMania 32, and I highly doubt anyone else does. I mean, has anybody else been like, you know what? I really want to watch the Brock Lesnar versus Dean Ambrose hardcore rules match. Wasn't that fun? There's literally not a human on the planet who has ever said that. I like to think of sentences that have never been said by people. It was a game that I used to play in college. Like, my college roommate said, fuck Bartolo Colon. I bet you he thinks Bob Saget is funny. Probably nobody has ever said that string of sentences before until my roommate Mike said it. So anyway, flash forward to 2019. He's winning the tag team title, the Raw tag team titles with Curt Hawkins on the WrestleMania 39 pre-show, which I did not see because I was too busy in the parking lot having Ben Zanny's mysterious alcohol, bourbon, whatever the hell it was, concoction, straight out of Chattanooga. So I skipped it. And you know what? I have absolutely no regrets about it. And if you listen to my WrestleMania show, I have very little regrets about anything that I might have missed. But I guess, in thinking about Hawkins and Ryder, they're a gatekeeper tag team. And there's no shame in that. I refer to the Beverly Brothers as the heel version of the gatekeeper tag team. I mean, you can go back to the 80s. You got the Young Stallions are probably in that category as well. There's one issue that I have with William Regal around this time. And actually, you know, I guess towards even, you know, his days in NXT where he's been the authority figure. His long hair makes him look like a weed guy. It really makes him look like a guy who just wants to sit back and smoke weed all the time. I don't like him with the long hair. I like him with the straight, slicked back Mike Francesa hair that he had when he was, you know, trying to make Bobby Eaton a civilized guy in all those vignettes back in 95. I know, people want to change their look every so often. I mean, hell, I have a giant knee immobilizer on my right leg. I mean, that's how I've changed my look in the last week. But Regal, he's winding down his career in 2013. And no surprise, he becomes a great announcer in NXT. I believe he wins Best Announcer in the Observer Awards for both 2013 and 2014, where he got pulled off commentary to save NXT from the scourge of JBL, who was the authority figure. And I remember this was right after I had started watching NXT, and I was all in at that point. When Regal became the authority figure, I said, okay, this is the kind of promotion I want to watch on a weekly basis. 1 hour, and Regal is in charge. Now, the commentary for this match is Josh Matthews and Santino Marella. So, I can... not only is this a team that I have not... I have not covered on Greetings from Allentown before. I don't think I've ever watched a match with these two guys together. And it's kind of funny because Regal, his real last name is Matthews. And Gorilla Monsoon, of course, Santino Morella's name is a nod to Bob Morella, Gorilla Monsoon. And it kind of makes me wish that the commentary team also had a guy with a real last name Matthews and a real last name Morella, that being Gorilla Monsoon and William Regal. And they would have actually been a pretty damn good team together. I think Regal Maybe not at Bobby Heenan level in terms of commentary, but I could see Regal saying something snotty and Gorilla saying, "Will you stop?" And Gorilla had chemistry with other guys, you know, well beyond Bobby Heenan. It's like I like the Stan Lane ones from like Wrestling Challenge in 1994, especially the one before WrestleMania 10 where Gorilla is clearly pointing out that Stan Lane just likes to go out and get laid. It's just really funny. So Santino, I'm really hoping that perhaps he will provide some sort of insight. And he comments on the great veteran, William Regal.
William Regal is a very intimidating person. Look at his demeanor, the way he moves, the way he walks. He's like a real Villa.
We're no more than a minute into Santino Marella on commentary, and I've already made some determinations about him. One being that I don't really understand what he's saying too much. So Jesse Ventura, he ain't. And he's not even in Angelo Mosca, where I enjoy him for many other different reasons. So I guess I'm just going to have to deal with it as we go along. Now, Zach, he does not do the ROH traditional handshake. Instead, he does the fist bump thing, because apparently he's somewhere from the Howie Mandel school. Maybe he was trained by Howie Mandel. Oh, yeah, that's right. Howie would not have touched a person, so there's no way he could have run a wrestling school. So Regal will not do it, so Zach preens on the corner turnbuckle, and they just kind of go back and forth with it, where Regal does that thing where he raises his left hand to the crowd, and yep, this is Saturday morning television wrestling in the year 2012. I don't know what the hell I've gotten myself into here. So we get a go behind takedown wrist lock, and we do get a funny sequence with Santino, but again, I'm going to give the credit to William Regal on this because, you know, he's an all-time, not only wrestling legend, but comedy legend as well. So he starts bickering with Santino at the announcer desk, and you can actually overhear both of them.
Sort of reaction? Does it bother you?
No, you don't.
I've got it.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do.
No, you don't.
Oh, yes, I do.
Oh, no, you don't.
Oh, yes, I do.
You don't got nothing.
Oh, yes, I do.
Oh, no, you don't.
Oh, yes, I do.
Oh, no, you don't.
Oh, Zack Ryder got the jump there on William Regal, who was actually arguing with Santino Marella here at ringside.
Sorry, he was yelling right at me.
So if this is going to be a comedy match, I think Regal is more than capable of holding his own in this one, but that was really all we were going to get. I thought that they were going to go in the Bugs Bunny direction. I think it's the one where Bugs Bunny is arguing with the umpire when they're playing the Gas House Gorillas, and it's like, yes, no, yes, no, or maybe it was ball strike, ball strike. And eventually Bugs changes course, and the umpire changes course in the part of it and completely forgets where he's at. So we're back to a trade of arm work, and I'm starting to wonder, is Saturday Morning Slam some sort of tribute to like 1977 AWA wrestling? It's like, grab an arm and that's what we're going to do because of all the restrictions, wrist locks and such, no head or neck moves, and get a hammer lock. And Jack Briscoe would be in his glory on this show. Talked about being terrible at calling the amateur stuff last week, but Jack Briscoe would be a regular on Saturday Morning Slam because they wouldn't know what to do with him in the year 2012. He had a drop kick by Ryder, so kind of a modern wrestling hall, as Regal rolls out to the floor to avoid the broski boot. And we actually go to a commercial in the middle of the match, and once again, it is Zack Ryder. And it's the one that you heard in the open to the show where he's saying, "Don't try this at home. We are trained professionals," which I don't remember if something happened in 2012, but I think this is more a function of this being a children's show, and they don't want them doing any of the stuff. I mean, it's all amateur mat work. So really, I mean, you could actually learn something by learning amateur wrestling holds. I mean, I'm not saying that it's for every kid out there, as Regal does get tossed back in. He gets up on the apron, and he kind of is brought back in over the top rope. But then again, you know, he does pick a leg, so Regal does go to work on a body part, but then we get a knuckle lock, as Regal cannot keep the shoulders down, but then Zach reverses it on Regal, who then bridges up and out of it. And Santino, you know, I just want to give you a sense of what I'm dealing with him, with this guy on color commentary.
Remember before when I said he's a well-seasoned veteran?
Yes.
I remembered what season. It's called Old Spice. Sorry, that's a bad joke.
was trying to think, and there's probably no way to actually account for this, how Bobby Heenan was on commentary for roughly 7 years in the WWF. And did he ever tell a joke as bad as that? I would think not, because he would generally come up with something better. Probably would have used some sort of seasoning, like food seasoning, and not a deodorant. So Regal holds on to the arm and shoulder, and he's making this work the best he can, given the restrictions. He locks in kind of what looks like the Becky Lynch disarmor, but it doesn't really hold. So we get into a standing hammerlock, and Ryder ends up reversing it into a roll-up for two. Ryder then grabs the hands, able to execute a monkey flip, a drop kick, and then a crossbody, which also gets two. And now he goes for the Rough Rider leg lariat. And I know what you're thinking. Wouldn't a leg lariat be an attack on the neck? And yes, it is. And what do? The camera cuts away, looking at the announce desk, while he hits the move, and for much of the pinfall as well. And that is how Zack Ryder defeats William Regal on this edition of Saturday Morning Slam. I mean, Regal saved this because, well, first of all, he is actually awesome in the way The Miz talks about it. I mean, nothing against Zack Ryder, but go get your toy box. I know that the line is Shine Box, and I'm cleaning it up quite a bit, but you're in there with Regal. I mean, try to keep up here. I don't mean to sound pretentious or anything, but this is, I know, it's even 2012, Regal. Why am I disappointed in a match that aired on Saturday Morning Slam? It's just a lot of problems with it. I mean, you're going to cut away because of a leg lariat, because some kid might try to do that. The kid would end up falling on their ass if they tried to do it. They would learn their lesson real quick. They'd probably get right back up, and then all the other kids would make fun of them for a little while. And that's perfectly fine. That's the way my generation grew up.
Wishing is powerful stuff. When we make wishes, we reach beyond what seems possible. We stake out a vision. As powerful as the act of wishing is, having a wish come true can be a game changer.
Well, hello. How are you?
That's the story of Chris Gracious, a 6-year-old Arizona boy who wished to be a police officer on April 29th, 1980. Volunteers who granted his wish that day were so moved, they created Make-A-Wish, which has grown into a global charity that now grants a child's wish every 23 minutes. How do I know? I'm not just a WWE superstar, actor, rap artist. I'm a wish granter.
Perfect. Whoa. Absolutely perfect. How you been, man? Everything all right?
In Make-A-Wish, I've granted the wishes of hundreds of children with life-threatening illnesses. Of all the tough guys I tangle with in the WWE ring, I've never encountered more bravery or toughness than I see in each Wish kid that I meet.
I just want to point out that this is the guy who would get routinely booed by half the audience. They're running down the history of the Make-A-Wish Foundation. Everybody knows the whole history with John Cena and Make-A-Wish and how he's like the record holder for the most wishes granted, which speaks a lot to his star power and also to how they try in vain to create another John Cena, and it's not Roman Reigns' fault. I almost called him Roman Reigns. I must be thinking of Dolph Ziggler's hair again. Roman Reigns, I mean, if they just let him be himself like he was in The Shield, everything would have turned out fine. But Vince always has this kind of, I want to fit this guy in a template. It's the Diesel thing. He doesn't want to let things just be organically a lot of the time, unless his back is up against the wall, which is why I'm somewhat hopeful there's a little bit of competition. But then again, AEW is competing with NXT, which Vince, I don't know how much mind he's really paying it. And with the XFL coming along, who knows how much of Vince's, you know, attention is going to be on the wrestling product. But yeah, you guys didn't appreciate John Cena, many of you, and you should be ashamed of yourselves, because now look, he's not even there, and now you gotta watch fucking Seth Rollins matches, and have like five fucking versions of Seth Rollins 365 on the award-winning WWE Network. Oh sure, we can't have hidden gems, but we have plenty of room for Seth Rollins documentaries that nobody, and I mean nobody, gives a shit about.
The answer is C, Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase. If you got it right, two thumbs up. Good job.
We have a new champion!
Look, I'm going to apologize for what I said earlier. I don't want to be gatekeeping or anything. If you don't know what happened in 1988, you're more than welcome to listen to my podcast. I mean, after all, I'm really not covering much of the modern product anyway, except for this show, which is a complete emergency, as I went into. Now, for next week on the Saturday Morning Slam, they tell us that it is Family Health and Fitness Week or Day or whatever, so I guess they'll be doing something of that sort. For health, I don't know if they're going to be talking about gallbladders. For fitness, they're going to be talking about, you know, building strength in your knees. Who knows? But, hey, John Cena is going to be around. No, he's not going to be wrestling a match on Saturday Morning Slam. Instead, you're just going to hang out with him and have it be kind of a personality profile. Like what they wanted to turn the show into. The CW people, they wanted to turn it into a magazine show. A la, what it said was NBA's inside stuff. It'd be amazing to see, like, Ahmad Rashad, like, you know, playing grab ass with the WWE superstars. But then again, that's pretty much not too different than what we have now with the Sam Roberts of the world and all those dudes. But we do have one more thing on this show. Mike, I'm sorry, I can't help but laugh because this is completely ridiculous. Also, you know, I should take a picture of myself having to podcast this show because I have to keep my right leg straight. And I can't elevate it and podcast at the same time because I won't podcast with my headset on, although I probably should just because it would make my life a lot easier. Maybe I'll do that if my leg is still like this a week from now. But anyway, so Miz is here again to give us 5 tips on how to be awesome. Oh, this should be good.
Tip number 1, dress the part. You need to look like a champion. If you're going to be a champion, if you're going to be somebody, a star that people look at, you got to dress the part.
Yeah, I know that there's a saying, dress for the job that you want and not the job that you have. But when I think about it, well, I get to wear a hooded sweatshirt to work. So does that mean I want to be the head coach of the Patriots? Especially if I'm wearing my BU one that I accidentally ripped that one time so it looks like a Bill Belichick hoodie. Or hey, kids, if you want to be a porn star, get a bunch of silk robes and a lot of gold medallions and walk around like that. I think it's funny how my own content on the podcast is more adult on this TVG show that I'm covering. So anyway, what's number 2? This is one that actually sounds like pure Vince McMahon.
Tip number 2. Walk the part. When you walk into a room, I want you to pretend there's a string attached to your head and pull it up. Like your mother always said, stand up straight. Stand up straight. Have some confidence. Walk the part, kids.
Yes, kids. Walk with that Vince McMahon swagger where you have your arms out wildly like a cartoon character. And try not to blow out your quads when you're going somewhere walking like that. I'm sorry. If I was going to do something 21st century, I know the 2005 Royal Rumble would have been something, but I think that's been covered by other people better than I possibly could. I mean, the man blew out both of his quads. I'm not going to take the light in somebody suffering a leg injury, especially in the state that I'm in right now. Very interesting one for number 3.
Tip number 3, listen to naysayers. If someone says you can't do something, prove them wrong. Because in your mind, you're stronger than that. You're better than that.
Well, that's some interesting advice. 2012 already being in the age of Twitter, which it might not be what it would eventually become, this toxic cesspool. So maybe he might want to amend that one, take it back, walk it back a bit, include social media stuff in there. You know, certain guidance. I know it's only a half-hour program.
Tip number 4. Be loud. Be heard.
Awesome!
Talk like you're a star. Because guess what? If you're not heard, nobody's listening.
Well, clearly Miz has never done a wrestling podcast. Because if I talk too loud, well, you know, then I got to go back and adjust the levels. I got to talk at a normal rate. I know. Okay, be loud. Be heard. But don't be too loud because then you're going to have to go back and post and edit it down. I assume that he's giving that advice to kids for that reason, because it's much more likely that you'll become a wrestling podcaster than an actual wrestler.
And the 5th and final tip that I'm going to give you is this simple. You can be good, you can be bad, but there's nothing like being The Miz. And I'm awesome.
I'm not sure what kind of lesson I was supposed to glean from that. No wonder why society is all screwed up. I'm not saying that the young people are bad or anything, but anybody who watched this episode of Saturday Morning Slam, what are they going to glean from what The Miz is telling them? Their five tips to be awesome. I mean, I guess dress the part and I don't know, but I don't know what you're really getting out of it, because you're going to need some sort of parental guidance, I think, to help you through it. Anyway, I hope I've done enough padding on this half-hour show from 2012, which I'm never going to touch again, and that'll do it for Saturday Morning Slam, mercifully, for September 22nd, 2012. Now, in other podcasts, on the Our Vantage Point podcast with Joe Morata and Michael Quinn, it's episode 159 for them, and they got a mid-Carter series, a mid-Carter appreciation series, I should say. And this week, it's one of the best ones you could possibly think of. Ricky Martel. Now, I know he was a main eventer in the AWA in the mid-80s. However, let's come to grips with the fact that hardly anybody gives a shit about the AWA. We're talking about his run mainly as the model Rick Martel, when he was sensational, albeit a guy who would come and go as he pleased, which I also admire, by the way. But when he'd roll in, he would always have a certain je ne sais quoi, as they say in Ricky Martel's home province. And on the Wrestling Podcast About Nothing with Mike Crockett, Brian Fury, and Brian Malonis, they're taking a look ahead to 2020, ones to watch for the year 2020. I'm pretty sure it's going to be all Fury and Malonis on that one. I'm not sure Mike Crockett has his finger on the pulse of the current product, but I'm sure he's steering the ship in wise directions as Malonis and Fury are telling him what's going on and how good everything is that he's missing. But anyway, do check those out. And of course, my good friend Steve Bennett of the Sportscasters, do check out his show and its extensive catalog, with lots of great interviews. Joe Buck and Kenny Albert. I mean, the list goes on and on. His Rolodex never fails to impress me. And while you're at it, please give a 5-star review for Greetings from Allentown on Apple Podcasts. Just even out of sympathy for my plight, okay? Because it provides what is known as social proof that you're listening to and enjoying this program. Now, next week, I don't have Vinny Vegas Corner, because as I'm taping this, they're literally running the touchdown montage on Red Zone for week 17. So I can't do a playoff thing. I'm going to have to do it on Twitter. But I did make 3 picks on Twitter for last week, and I got screwed over by the Broncos allowing a touchdown at the end. They won, but they didn't cover. So I ended up going, I think, 2-1 on the week, but I'll update that for the whole regular season when we get to next week's show, which is 150, and it is going to be a doozy, because I've been wanting to do this one for a very long time, over 2 years. This is the May 3rd, 1985 edition of WWF TNT, and this is the one where they featured all the unsung heroes, as they called them, although you might refer to them as jobbers, I might refer to them as enhancement talents, or I might refer to them as absolute freaking living legends. Like, where else are you going to see a show that has Rusty Brooks, Pete Doherty, Johnny Rods, Jose Luis Rivera, Mario Mancini, Steve Lombardi, Jim Powers, Paul Roma, Charlie Fulton? All right, well, maybe Charlie Fulton doesn't fit in with the rest of those guys, but they're all on TNT. They're on 3 at a time. And we get a little comedy routine after all of that, which, I don't know, mildly amusing, I guess. But I look forward to digging into that one. I thank you so much for listening to my show as I'm just, you know, hanging out here with my leg out straight. See what I'm going to do now. The problem is I can't lean back with my headphones on because they're attached to the laptop. Now, I could move the laptop up, but that means having to do too many things at once. So now I'm just sitting back on the couch with my leg up in the air on the arm of the chair and just trying to relax, knowing that they're going to cut me open in about 12 to 14 hours. I'm not nervous about it. I just haven't gone through anything like this before. I'm just, you know,
I'm not the first guy to go through this, and I won't be the last. In fact, I might not be the last person there that day. So why don't I just call it a wrap here, and thank you once again, and tune in next Thursday for another exciting episode of Greetings from Out of Town.
Na 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 na.
Oh, no, you don't.
Oh, yes, I do.
You don't got nothing.
Oh, yes, I do.
Oh, no, you don't.
Oh, yes, I do.